The Sound of Hockey episode 281, we're calling this one the Jeff Skinner episode. Why are we calling it that, John?
Jeff Skinner just hit 1,000 games in the NHL.
Okay.
And in the 2016-2017 season, he had 281 shots on goal.
Okay. I thought you were going to just say because he hit his 1,000th game. Yeah. I was like, well, that's kind of lazy.
You know, I was looking, well, I already had that on the show notes, and then I'm like, and I was looking for something, and I found 281. Huh. And that's when I knew.
Wow.
So do you know?
What a fortuitous bounce for you.
It was
serendipitous.
It was.
You might say.
Yes. Do you know Jeff Skinner, who's played 1,000 games in the NHL, has never played a playoff game?
Wow. Wow. That's something. It's pretty rough.
Everly, for context, who just hit his 1,000, has played 76.
And he has been on, well, I guess, yeah, with like the Islanders, he had a lot of playoff runs. Did he have playoff runs with the
Edmonton,
Oilers?
I think.
He
yeah,
did?
A little bit.
Okay. Hmm. Yeah. How about that? That's quite the streak. 1,000 regular season games and no playoff games.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
We really got to get the Sabres in the playoffs. That'd be a fun time.
It
I
would.
I feel like that would be a scene.
Well, mm-hmm. Man, he must have landed like right after... although he didn't start with them, right? Didn't he start with Carolina?
Carolina, yeah.
I'm thinking about like because the Sabres were so good for a little bit in like the early 2000s when they had Danny Briere and Thomas Vanek and Ryan Miller and there were other players. I think Maxim Afinagenov when I was on that team, maybe.
Yeah. Stu Barnes.
Oh.
That was much earlier, I think.
Okay.
So.
But yeah, anyway. Okay. Well, we're a Buffalo Sabres podcast now. This is Sound
nope,
of Hockey.
That's not something we want to do.
Okay,
no.
I am Darren Brown at Darren Fun Brown on the X, joined as always by John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL 2 Seattle on the X as well.
And we're also joined by Curtis Izaki. Hello, Curtis.
Hello, everyone. Deep Sea Hockey on the X.
And we're excited to be here with you from Bar Down Studios in Seattle. We are actually a Seattle Kraken-focused podcast, even though we said at the top of the show that we're a Buffalo Sabres.
We lied right from
the
start.
We were lying.
Yeah.
Was that an April Fool's?
Could have been.
Little gag there.
Got him.
Yeah,
got him. Yep. lots of Kraken talk this week, certainly, because there has actually been a fair amount of news, I think. There's been quite a few things happening. I think a lot of fans have sort of been rooting for some call-ups and things of that nature to start seeing some of the kids. The call-ups had just happened when we recorded last week, and we did talk about, I think, the first games for Logan Morrison and Ryan Winterton. But since then, Shane Wright came up, so lots to talk about there. We can start with the games, though. The Kraken actually had a second win against Anaheim, who remains pretty bad, it turns out.
They still look bad.
Yeah, they confirmed it on the second game, although that one was a little more hairy than the first one. But
they just couldn't stay out of the penalty box.
Yeah, 10 power plays. I think it was more penalties than that. I think they had 11 or 12 penalties on the night, but
12
penalties and 10 power plays.
Yeah.
On which the Kraken converted three times, I believe, which...
Well, technically five goals were scored on the power play.
That's
on the
true.
Kraken power play.
Yep, that's true.
But they only converted on three of them, so...
I think what you're alluding to is the rare two goals in under a minute shorthanded that
the
Seattle
same,
Kraken...
On the same power play.
Yeah, that the Seattle Kraken gave up. That wasn't ideal. That second one also was... kind of a turnover at the offensive blue line from one of the call-ups, so that was unfortunate, but I mean, it was really his, that was Logan Morrison, it was really his only mistake that I've seen so far. Of course it, well, only glaring mistake.
Well, I'll put a pin in that one.
Okay.
We'll get to it.
We're going to start finding some more mistakes in the call-ups.
We'll circle back to the call-ups.
Yeah,
we'll talk about them. We'll talk about them.
In general, though, I think they've all looked really good, is my point. And we're going to talk more about that. But in that game, let's see, goals by Jaden Schwartz, Andrei Burakovsky, Ty Cartier, who scored for the first time in forever. And then Maddie scored also. So Maddie's cooking pretty well all of a sudden on this line with Elli Tolvanen and Oliver Bjorkstrand. And they're all kind of... getting points.
Like that line.
I know it's pretty good.
Nice.
It's got the makeup and the feel of when they first put those two wings with Yanni Gord, right?
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. I mean, maybe Yanni Gord is not having the best season, right? And not to dump on Yanni, but
I think his luck had turned when he got some new line mates, right? Tanev, and he was playing with Cartier for a bit, so he's gone pretty cold since then. But I think that's the nature of that line in general. But I think he's playing fine.
Yeah. So they follow up that win with a 3-0 loss to Dallas. You know, Dallas is really good. I'm pretty convinced that they are a very legit, very good team. And, you know, I went to their morning skate before that game, and I was kind of looking at their lineup and, like, who they were sending out there. And I even asked Pete DeBoer about their, like, what's different this year compared to last year. And he said, I just think we have depth scoring. I think 12 months ago, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but 12 months ago, I think a lot of people kind of thought we were a one-line team, which I never really thought that about them. Like, I thought they had some pretty good players sprinkled throughout their lineup. But now if you look at it, like, with Matt Duchesne there, and, like, Sam Steele hasn't scored a lot, but he's been a good fit. On the back end, they have Logan Stankoven, who's...
Wyatt Johnson.
Wyatt Johnson's coming up on 30 goals if he hasn't hit it already. I mean, it's like all these guys from the top to the bottom of their lineup. And what I thought was really interesting about DeBoer's comments is he said, we're built a little bit more like Seattle's team from last year, where anybody can score. And you're like, oh, man, that stings.
I miss that team.
That stings a little bit. Yeah. Pete. But, yeah, it was interesting to kind of wrap my head around just how good they actually are. And the Kraken, I thought, you know, if the Kraken were going to win that night, I said it to some folks before the game. It's like, if they're going to win tonight, they're going to need Joey Decord to play really well, and they're going to need to kind of rope-a-dope this team, because this team is much better than the Kraken at this season. Like, they are much, much better. And that was almost exactly what happened. Seattle did stay with them, especially through the first period. I think it was 0-0 through 20, 0-0 through 20.
Yep.
And then, like, kind of slowly things went sideways as the game went on. But, you know, and also there's no offense to speak of there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, you talked about the depth scoring, but what really impressed me with the Stars through the first period was they weren't giving the Kraken any space. There was no space through the neutral zone, no space to set up in the offensive zone. Their defensive presence was just really impressive. I thought the Kraken started to turn things a little bit in the second period. The play seemed a little bit more balanced. Maybe the Kraken were getting some chances here and there. And then, you know, just that it was actually at the very end of the second period, the first goal went in. It was that, you know, point shot that Wyatt Johnson deflected.
Right. Yeah, the high tip.
And it was just kind of the Kraken had a pretty good 5 minutes before that. You were starting to feel pretty good about their play, and then that was it. And then Larson, you know, takes the major to start the third period, and the game's pretty much over.
And that didn't end up really mattering that it was a 5 minute major, but because the goal that Joe Pavelski scored was like 10 seconds into that power play. So it didn't really matter if it was a two or a five.
I say.
Although, yeah. I mean, then they'd end up with four additional minutes of penalty time.
Yeah, right.
Like, whereas if he had scored, they would have been right back to even strength.
And so, he wasn't on the ice.
Exactly, yeah.
The top minute getter was not on the ice.
And he also got a game misconduct. So,
right.
Yeah. I did want to talk about, though, I thought that was a terrible call. Like, I looked at it a bunch of times, and I thought it was a terrible call. Did you?
When I saw it live, I couldn't tell. When I saw the replays they were showing in the arena, because I'm just looking at the Twins or the big screen there, I'm like, I don't get it, but I don't necessarily have a great angle, great feed, right, if you will. And so I totally agree with, I just was like, okay, there might be something there. When they reviewed it, well, for one thing, as I learned that, you can call a boarding and then change it after review.
Yeah.
I've never known that before.
Well, you certainly can reduce the penalty, too.
I knew that.
Yeah.
Right? But I'm like, well, that's not a board, because when they were showing the replay. But then they said elbowing. I apparently, on the Root broadcast, well, I rewatched it the next day. On the Root broadcast, they were talking about, oh, here's an angle that shows it. And I'm like, no, that doesn't show it. What happens is Chris Tanev's head whips back, but it's not clear there was contact. And most of the angles I saw that had the best angle, to me, you couldn't tell that if it was an elbow or not.
No.
Yeah.
It did not look like there was an elbow.
Yeah. I mean, you could see on the one replay you're talking about, Larson's elbow comes up, but I don't think it makes contact with Tanev's head. I think Tanev recoils, because it looks to me like Tanev's arm kind of gets bent back and maybe his arm popped out of his shoulder popped out or something.
He was favoring when he went down the tunnel too. So it was just a weird thing.
And he came back.
He did come. Yeah, but he also left the game after that. He didn't finish the game.
Okay.
So like there was an injury there, but not because of a dirty hit. You know?
No, it seemed like Larson went to the side, didn't go through the body on the boards, and it's just kind of an unfortunate. He caught his arm in a weird way, and I think it's pretty clear the league agrees that there wasn't anything there because there was no rumblings of a fine or suspension or anything. It was just a nothing after that. It's unfortunate. Probably didn't dictate the outcome of the game, as you mentioned, Darren, but it was kind of like them going on the power play right at the beginning of the third period, coming off the end of the second period where there was the unfortunate goal. It's just kind of the game was lost at that point.
Yeah. Not that it really matters in the scheme of things.
Okay. Question. When is an elbow 2 minutes versus five?
That's a good question. Because I feel like they really only call elbowing if you like catch a guy in the face with your elbow, right?
Right.
Maybe if you...
Do you think it was injury related?
I mean, it almost looked to me like they saw it and they were like, all right, his elbow's up here and it's kind of near his head and he went off injured. So it's got to be an elbow to the head that injured him. That's almost how it looked to
me. But can there be a 2 minute elbow?
There's such a thing.
To the head?
But not like, to the head.
Where else do you give an elbow?
I don't know.
The chest?
I don't think.
Okay.
My brain's
anyway,
in a,
let's,
in a pretzel.
Let's move on, I guess.
Basically, if you elbow a guy in the face but you don't hurt him, it's 2 minutes.
I think maybe the takeaway here is, I don't know if the listeners have been at the arena and actually seen the review that the on-ice officials do. They're looking at like a iPad or tablet that's quite small. And maybe we need to get them something bigger.
But you know? Hey, but things are very high definition easy. Like, but don't they confer with Toronto and
you
all
would
that?
Think so.
Like,
you would think so.
Yeah, I don't know. I just didn't agree with the call. I wanted to discuss it.
I agree with your disagreement.
I've been waiting on the edge of my seat for like 4 days to be able to discuss that with you guys to see if you also thought it was a bad call, because I certainly thought it was a bad call. And then they go to San Jose. They get a 4-2 win. This one, they could have just run away with it. They didn't have to make it an uncomfortable game, right? And they kind of like let the Sharks back into the game with some rather sloppy play, I thought, in the second period. And I don't know. They come out with the win.
The Kraken have had a couple games like this year where it's just the first 5 or 10 minutes, it's evident they're much better than the team they're playing against. I think this happened with San Jose and the game they actually did run away with. But
that one, I still think about that. This is the funniest.
It's still a funny game. Yeah. But then they just, it seemed like every time, you know, they were still getting chances, but they were trying to be a little bit too cute, making perfect plays. You know, Burakovsky turned down some shots. Oleksiak and Larson turned down a shot. And these are like slot chances for like the perfect pass to like the empty net goal. And it just seemed like they felt like they could do anything out there, and it kind of bit them a bit. I mean, they let San Jose hang around for a long time in a game that should have been a blowout.
I think sometimes when you go up early and then you kind of sit back and you can't get the full throttle back. Right?
Yep.
That's
what it felt like.
It feels like I see that across the league and multiple teams, but maybe that's confirmation bias.
Hey, at least they didn't pull what they pulled before the All-Star break in this
one. So. And I think that game, they looked like the better team the first 10 minutes, like dominated the first 10 minutes, but didn't get a goal.
Right. They got rope-a-doped that night.
They did.
It's a rope-a-dope full circle.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So in that one, we had Vince Dunn returning. He came back from injury in that one. And I thought, you know, you saw some flashes of what he can do, you know, puck moving and the pace and all that, but also some rust. I mean, he definitely had
made some mistakes,
blunders in there.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I wrote about it in 3 takeaways and put a little video clip in there where there was one shift at the end of the second period where like every time he touched the puck, he did something to help the offensive side of things. And it started with the puck went out into the neutral zone. He went back, made like a completely blind over his shoulder pass to transition the play going back the other way. And then he had 2 or 3 very nice plays in the offensive zone too to help create things. But to your point, yes, there was obviously some rust there. There were some mistakes, but man, they've been missing him.
I love that clip, by the way.
Yeah.
That was really cool. Cause he just like, you're like, oh, he pops in and out of the picture, but like he pops in to throw a pass down low or kind of pop it to another part, like creating these opportunities. It was, is a great illustration of what we've missed.
I think that he has really assumed the mantle of, you know, the number one defenseman on this team pretty 100%. Clearly. He might even be the best player on the team, frankly, when you see what he, you know, what this team has done without him, you know, and it was just the only teams they beat were Anaheim, I don't know if that really counts.
Wenberg in that same category?
Well, so I think missing Wenberg certainly hurts.
I'm just kidding.
I don't know. Just there's no one else. I mean, Riker could be a version of this eventually.
Eventually.
But he's not right now. Riker is not the same type of puck mover and offensive player that Don is.
You don't
is.
Say.
Okay. And so it's just...
I mean, yeah. I agree with Curtis, though. Like, yeah. I do think that Riker's on that track that in 3 or so years, he could be at Vince Dunn's level. But he's not close to that right now.
Man, I think we need to pump the brakes on a lot of people right
really?
Now. Yeah.
I think he's got some of those flashes, though, that nobody else on the team... has.
He's the only other one that can replicate it. I'm maybe more on the skeptical side of like what his ultimate upside is.
Okay.
That's kind of what I'm saying. I'm not saying he's not an NHLer.
No, I know.
Yeah.
I know you're not saying that.
And I'll, sorry, tangent.
Throwing things around here.
I do believe Riker's shown a little bit more flash in the last couple games as well. Mm-hmm. And I like seeing that. That shows to me he's starting to get comfortable. He's starting to develop a little bit more at the NHL level. I'll give you that.
Couple of milestones in this game also. You had Jordan Eberle getting his 700th point on Shane Wright's goal, which we're going to talk about Shane Wright in a bit. You also had Oliver Bjorkstrand getting goal number 20 for the third year in a row. And I think it's like his fifth time in 6 seasons.
Yeah.
And the only one that he didn't make it was, I think, the shortened COVID year.
That sounds right.
And that Bjorkstrand goal was a beauty.
It was a nice
right,
one.
Right. There was, you know... maybe 6 inches above the shoulder, and he hit it.
And Matty didn't get an assist on that one. He initially did, and then they took it away, and I thought that was bogus.
And he's sitting on 99 points? Is that the deal?
That would have been 100, and they took it away from him.
Sons of bitches.
Trash. Whoa. Yeah. John.
I'm getting ready for the playoffs,
yikes.
Okay?
Yikes. Yeah. The Kraken aren't even in it.
I mean, there's going to be playoffs.
That's
I'm watching OHL and Liga.
But did you, you might have already mentioned, Matty Beniers had a goal in this one.
Yeah.
And it was a shot where, you know, the puck came back to him from down low, and it was kind of that one-timer shot that he's shown flashes of at times, but has been pretty inconsistent for him. I feel like he, like, kind of fouls it off as much as he gets it. He gets it right where he wants it to go. I think that's the type of shot. And working on just like kind of his off puck play in the offensive zone, I think if I had Matty Beniers' ear over the summer, I think that's what I'd like him to work on. Just like finding ways to, because we know what he can do with the puck. You know, you give him space in the offensive zone, he's gonna find his teammates with good passes. I think he needs to kind of develop the off the puck game in the offensive zone a little bit and work on that shot a bit. If he can take that up, because the thing about Matty, so many good things about his game, but he needs to be, you know, 20 plus goals. Like if you're going to be a top 6 center, you just, and get power play time, you need to be above 20 goals.
I agree.
He's nowhere close to that this year.
He does have what, 13 now. So he's
not, I mean,
like,
maybe he could get there.
Maybe he could get far off, but you know, I actually, to your point, I think there's a level of just strength on his stick that he needs to, right? He's still very slight. And I think to your point about mishitting a lot of his shots, I think some of that comes with strength. Like, I think sometimes if it's off the toe, you can kind of muscle through it. Like, you think about how strong Alex Ovechkin is, right? And like, he's obviously got one of the best shots ever. But even when he mishits it, it still goes on net with pace. And those tend to go in because they're flying all over the place, right? Like these weird, wacky knuckleball shots.
Right.
So yeah, I think you're spot on there too. John, you seemed like you had something to say.
I'm sorry. If I could get in Matty's ear,
it
would be put on 20 pounds, right? And that's, I think, to your point, is getting stronger.
Certainly. I think so. It's
20 might be a lot. I don't know, but I'm just kind of
sounds like a lot of pounds.
It's the Ovechkin summer program minus the Russia club in D.C.
Okay.
Stay away from there.
Okay.
And like drinking Dr. Pepper in your water bottle or whatever he does. So.
Or doing keg stands in the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well,
that won't happen.
There's an important part that has to happen before you can do that.
Prerequisite to that one?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's talk about Shane Wright, because I don't want to overreact, and by the time this podcast comes out, he's probably going to have played his second game. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so I'm going to be that one in this conversation. Yeah. Okay, we'll see.
How about this? Let's say we're reacting to just his one game, but we have some extra color to add to this because, Curtis, you and I saw him play in Coachella Valley last week. Now, when we saw him, Curtis, and I think you'll probably remember this, but like first shift of the game, he came out, he was on the line with, I think, Ryan Winterton and Marian Studenic, I believe.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And he took like a few steps and I was like, oh, he looks different. Like there was just this little pop, like he looks lighter on it. I don't know how to explain it necessarily, but he looks like more effortless when he skates. Like there's more power in his stride that wasn't there when we saw him the beginning of this season. And then meanwhile, you know, you see how quickly he can get the puck off of his stick. And John, you were talking about this the other day when we were hanging out, and it showed through in this game, you know, and that play where he ends up scoring, you look at what he does. Like, A, it starts with Vince Dunn, by the way. Vince Dunn makes a good breakout pass, but then he makes the pass into Jaden Schwartz in the neutral zone, follows it. He goes straight to it. So he creates support for Jaden Schwartz. Schwartz finds him. Then he makes like that extra little lunge to get to the puck before the Sharks defender can get there. And I just think at the beginning of the season, this play didn't happen, right? Because there's like that extra, again, that extra burst where he gets to that puck to get it over to Schwartz or to Eberle, I mean, and then he's available and he gets the puck off
and
his
stick. And he's waiting for it.
Immediately.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. So I think there's something, in the words of Mrs. Potts from Beauty and the Beast, I think there's something there that wasn't there before.
you were just building up to that line.
I was
you?
Not. Yep. That just came to me in the moment there. But
no, I do remember, you know, we had that conversation when we saw him down in Coachella Valley. And yeah, down there, he had really become one of the team's like key play drivers. Like he was setting up chances for his line regularly and, you know, carrying the puck and delivering it into the offensive zone. Really, he's really one of the top two or three most important players down there. You know, if the Firebirds are going to go on a long playoff run, and Shane Wright will return, it seems, to the Firebirds for that, he's going to be a big reason why. And he has come a long way down there this season, for sure. My sense of him last year in the NHL and even in the AHL was there was too much like kind of jitteriness, and I don't want to say panic, but I think he didn't realize how much time he had with the puck. It was just too frequently he would receive a puck and feel like he needed to
get rid of it right away.
Yeah. And that resulted in a lot of giveaways, you know, because he was passing before he was kind of diagnosing what was going on. And at the AHL level, he's kind of solved for the play speed down there. And he still attempts a lot of really complicated, difficult passes down there. And occasionally, you know, the giveaways still pop up down there. But now, you know, 8 times out of 10, it's the stuff we were seeing in juniors like before his draft. Like he's just can diagnose the speed, kind of control everything with his passing game and his offensive instincts. In a sense, I think it was good to break him in against the San Jose Sharks, who are kind of like a borderline AHL, NHL team, because I thought the Sharks were just like skating in sand out there. I mean, they weren't playing fast. If he had come up against the Stars, I don't know that he would have looked quite as good as he did. And you mentioned this. It's one game against the Sharks. Like, we're going to learn a lot more. I mean, Kraken are playing LA on Wednesday. So we'll learn a lot more in that game. But I thought that, you know, he, for one game against a not so great opponent, he looked like he belonged at the NHL level. I was trying to count them, at least three instances where he kind of did a pass that was too quick to an area. It might work in the AHL, but he had more time than he thought he had. Mm. And so I think he's still kind of getting it at the NHL level, but he's much farther along than he was before. Sorry, filibuster over.
I was going to say, we're spending 15 minutes on Shane Wright's one game. But
it's a big deal.
It is a big deal. Yeah. He had 15 minutes of
perfect
ice time.
So we're spending 1 minute for every minute of ice time that he got.
Which is the most he's had ever.
And it's the most we've talked about him on a...
I think he looks great. That's all I'll say. I mean, I don't want to...
Yeah, great analysis, John.
Well, no, but it's in a combination of how he's looked in the AHL and what I've heard from the team that this is kind of as advertised or as expected. And we should take a moment to... Well, maybe we should wait on this, but... acknowledge that maybe they have a good plan here with him spending the season in the AHL. right? Because he looks like a different player right now. So
100%.
I think. Both just said 100%. So what is that? 200%.
That's 200%. That's a good plan.
Wow,
amazing.
That's a really amazing good plan. Yeah. When he can be 200%.
It's kind of nice to see Shane Wright and Matty Beniers score in the same game. Right?
Agreed. Well, it was a nice night for the kids in general. I thought, and I also wrote about that in Three Takeaways. But because Ty Cartier should have scored, but it got waved off because Brandon Tanev was 3 feet offside. 3 feet. He was way off.
I know, but it wasn't 3 feet. It was like, it's probably a foot.
Okay.
So,
And then what else happened? There was something else. Beniers scored, Shane Wright scored.
He talked about Winterton kind of creating that opportunity against the boards and kind of getting the puck out of the zone. It ultimately led to the puck.
The Jared McCann breakaway.
The Jared McCann breakaway he fed. Yeah. That was a nice play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, a lot of good stuff from the kids in this one, certainly. And just, again, just a good example. I know we talked about this last week, but like a good example that the team is developing players in Coachella. And that's great.
Yep.
That's a great thing to see.
And so I don't know if we want to spend another minute on what we've seen from the other kids. I mean, Ryan Winterton, I think what he's doing right now, like if he could just kind of keep this up, he could be a like kind of capable fourth line-ish player for the team next year, as soon as next year.
Mm-hmm.
But I personally don't know if I really want that for him. I think ideally in my mind, he might spend some more time in the AHL and really focus on the offensive game. Because I would love for him to develop as something more than a fourth liner, you know, see if he could be a middle six wing down the road. And if that means spending an extra year at the AHL where he's put in an offensive forward role to see if that can be accomplished, I think that's a worthwhile investment of time to see if it's possible. But right now, I mean, granted, again, you know, particularly this last San Jose Seattle game, the veterans on both sides were they were not going 100% or playoff speed in that game. So the kids all kind of stood out because they really want that role. They want to be on the team. So I thought Cartier looked good. Winterton looked good. Wright looked good. But I really thought Winterton.
And Morrison was scratched. We should call that out.
Yeah.
Winterton stood out. Yeah. Morrison was scratched. But I've liked what I've seen from him in terms of like kind of the offensive creativity. Again, I think there's some work there. And I think ideally there's some more AHL time for him next season. But I mean, he's shown that he can come up and if you need him, he can play.
Interestingly, those two are roommates, Ryan Winterton and Logan Morrison, along with Tucker Robertson. So Tucker Robertson's just been in Coachella Valley living the solo life.
I know. With those guys out of town.
I was going to tweet the Will Smith meme on him at that house.
That would have been good.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think the intern can whip something like that.
Whip something like that.
See what the intern can do on that one.
You just got to wonder. I mean, Tucker Robertson is, so the three of them are roommates, if you didn't see this part of the story. And so I guess Tucker Robertson is just left to do all the housework.
I guess
two are up in the NHL. Yeah. That's rough for him.
And they were, I mean, Ryan Winterton was telling me that it's been a pretty symbiotic relationship. Like they all kind of pitch in on the dishes and they just kind of cook their own meals and things like that. And they all get along really well. And but it is a nice wrinkle in this story that Logan Morrison and Ryan Winterton came up together and they're
it's really cool,
good buddies.
Right?
I think that's pretty cool.
They played in Hamilton and stuff. So, real quick, I do want to call out what I don't want to say criticize Morrison, but I think he's having a hard time with the passes in the NHL.
Mm.
Did you feel like it was bouncing off his stick a little bit? A little bit more frequently than I'm used to seeing.
Maybe. It doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't jump out in my head.
I mean, because he did get power play time.
Yep. Yeah.
And we should also call out Shane got some power play time in the San Jose game. So anyway, I think I agree with your assessment. Logan's probably, and even Ryan, might start the season in Coachella next year. So.
I think the thing about Ryan, which makes me think that he could, if you wanted him to, he could be in the NHL right away, is that, you know, he's clearly a high-end athlete. I mean, we knew that dating back to the development camp where he like kind of won the, you know, kind
fitness
of
challenge.
The fitness challenge, right? Like he can hang in the NHL as an athlete. Sure. Like, you know, to a lesser extent than Maddie, but could he add 10 pounds? Absolutely.
Yeah.
That'd be great. But he can hang as an athlete and he can kill penalties. He can play on a fourth line right now. Again, I just like to see it go a little farther than that.
Yeah, agreed. And I think, you know, he definitely to me looks like there's something there. But I don't think either of those two are like NHL full-time ready.
No,
yet.
But you could imagine if you put Winterton into Ty Cartier's role that Cartier had this year, probably be about the same, right?
Maybe.
Man, more or less. I don't know about that.
I mean, Cartier, I think the difference is like Cartier is pretty thick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he's
stocky.
He can play a wrecking ball.
I'm just talking like production wise.
Yeah. I know, but that's an important component is to be NHL ready, and that might mean filled out.
Yes. If you're going to play a third line, fourth line role where you are expected to go in and be a wrecking ball, like I don't think Ryan Winterton is going to be a wrecking ball right now. I certainly don't think that for Logan Morrison either. So,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so Ty Cartier makes sense in the bottom six because that's just how he plays anyway. And he's a lot more like physically built out, I think, at this point. So, I don't know if Winterton would have played as well as Cartier in that role. But I don't know. Give him some more time as a top six forward in the AHL is what I think I planned on.
Agree totally. It would have looked different.
All right. As if we haven't done it enough, let's go down on the farm. Moo.
Well, those guys aren't on the farm.
Right? Yeah, they're in the
That's
big,
true.
They're in the big city now.
That's a great point.
In the slaughterhouse.
No. Okay. Fair enough.
No? Too far?
I guess so.
Okay.
What was that one book? I think it was called...
The Jungle?
The Jungle. Yeah. Yeah, that was disturbing, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Down on the farm, Lukas Dragicevic has signed his entry-level contract with the Seattle Kraken. Did he immediately join Coachella? I think that's what happened, right?
Yeah.
As an ATO, though.
Yeah, both he and Leighton Rode, who we talked about last week, signed entry-level contracts that start next season.
Right.
Which is typical for players like this. But what that means is they're not technically under contract with the Kraken right now, but they can sign what's called an amateur tryout agreement, which allows them to join Coachella Valley, practice, and get into games. So that's what's happened. Both Dragicevic and Rode are on the Firebirds roster. Next Firebirds game is Thursday. We'll see. I would think Rode will get into a game or two, hopefully. Dragicevic, I'm not as sure about, but maybe. Mm-hmm. He might get a game.
And then you guys have been glued to your TVs watching Finnish and Swedish hockey.
Hell yeah, correct? Hell yeah.
Can one of you bring me up to speed on what's the latest from across the pond?
Well, for starters, HV71 of the SHL, which mm-hmm. is the team that Oscar Fisker Mogard, friend of the pod, mm-hmm. plays for, they avoided
relegation.
Not relocation.
Couldn't think of the word, could you?
No, I was looking at the relocation, mm-hmm. relegation, which is nice, but it took seven games. Interesting, I expect him to play for HV71 next season, but HV71's like this very storied franchise in the SHL. It's surprising that they even got to that point. So I don't know what's going on because I can't read a lot of Swedish. So,
Ilves?
Of the Finnish League, the Liga League.
I think that's the league.
Yeah. Which Jani Newman plays for, was eliminated.
Yeah, they were the number two seed, and they lost in the first round.
It seems so like that's common where the upper seeds, because there's actually not that many teams in the Finnish Elite League. Yep. So, but one of our favorite Liga teams, Pelicans, advanced to the semifinals, and that is the goaltender there, Nicholas Kokko.
How great did he play?
He played well.
Yeah. I didn't see the game, but I figured he had to have been really
solid. I think that
his
team is much better than the other team, where the other goalie probably outplayed him because they were getting quality shots, but his save percentage was something like 958. You probably have that, Curtis.
Yeah, I think for the series, it was like 915 or something like that, but that's the third best in the League of playoffs. So he's been playing well. I mean, the whole point to get him to Pelicans, right, was to get him some ice time because he was kind of maybe even third on the depth chart with Karpat. So he's playing. Looks like he might get another, full playoff series at least. So good for him.
Finnish goalies, they tend to be kind of good. So it's exciting.
Yeah.
All right. That's our Down on the Farm. We now move on to Bad Boys. And we have two of them. Our first one is the Minnesota Wild's Ryan Hartman was suspended 3 games for unsportsmanlike conduct in their game against the Vegas Golden Knights, a game that they lost in overtime. We're going to talk more about that in a moment.
But what do you have to say for yourself or Ryan Hartman?
I have no comment on this, actually. But what did he do? He threw his stick. Yeah,
after the game, they lost. He just threw a javelin into the middle of the ice, like kind of toward the referees. Not quite.
Yeah. Like, it was kind of reported as towards the referees.
It was close.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
And you should be suspended. Yeah. Like, I'm not quibbling with that part.
Yeah.
But the narrative that he like threw it at a referee, kind of, maybe.
Well, anyway, it was kind of funny, actually.
I'm thinking about the...
It's definitely kind of funny. Yeah.
The bit in Happy Gilmore where he's like, Virginia's like, well, what's this I hear about you breaking a rake and throwing it into the woods? And he's like, what? I didn't break it. I just returned it to the wood because it's made of wood. Anyway.
Sounds about right.
And then Caden Gooley also got suspended for one game for slashing on Travis Konecny. I actually did not see this one.
This
at all.
One was...
Was it a bad one?
No, but the context here...
Yeah.
Is Caden Gooley was actually on the bench.
Oh, so that's right. I did see this.
Yeah, so he
I did see this.
Slashed him after Konecny was roughing up Slafkovský.
Mm-hmm.
So that was also kind of funny. Slafkovský's
on the Canadiens, isn't he?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I mean, yeah. But also, you don't want people slashing people from the bench.
Yeah.
So it's a suspension.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was like, kind of funny. He was like 2 feet off the boards. It wasn't like he was like mixing it up right next to the boards, right next to the bench.
And then we also have a couple of you don't see that every days. I never know how to make that plural. But I've been struggling with that for like 6 years now.
Well, 4, maybe 5.
We've been doing it for a while. Longer than you realize.
Yeah.
Yeah. Minnesota. So this is what we were just alluding to. But in that same game in which Ryan Hartman threw his stick like a javelin, broke his stick and returned it to the woods, they did the thing again where they pulled the goalie in overtime. And previously it worked, right? They pulled the goalie, take a 4-on-3 skater advantage. Last time they won the game on this. After that game, Matt Boldy was like, oh, I didn't even know we lose the loser point if we get scored on. Well, this time they went to the well one too many times, and they pulled the goalie, and the Vegas Golden Knights, I think it was Marchessault, maybe, that won it. So they scored into the open net, which meant that the Minnesota Wild lost their loser point, which you don't see that every day.
You know what's going through my mind right now?
Hmm.
Is with all my data, I have like logic built that if a team is the loser in period 4 or 5, they get a point.
Okay.
That's not the case anymore.
Right.
So my logic is now broken.
But it's only been broken by one game so
far. Yeah, but you don't build logic to like, you need build logic so it scales at any scenario.
Okay.
So this is going to be tricky.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how other organizations are dealing with it and even how it's displayed in the NHL data.
So I admit I
know you're thrilled about this, Darren.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I admit I haven't totally figured this out. But John Hines, after both of these games, has talked about this like, oh, yeah, the 4-on-3 advantage is so big. This is an obvious move. I cannot figure out how the math makes this a wise decision. It seems to me like it doesn't make sense.
Well, there's a break-even point.
But again, I haven't actually tried to do this. But just like rough justice in my head, feels like you need to be like 85 or 90% certain you're going to win when you pull your goalie to like make it work. If you assume the other scenario is like you're going to win half the time.
You lose in overtime and that there's a couple different scenarios, right? You could pull the goalie and time will run out. So no change. So there's
of course.
You don't lose anything there.
Right.
And then obviously the scenario where they get scored on and they lose that point. And then there's theoretically another part of the equation, which is your probability of winning a shootout. So it's not just a one figure, right? It's a combination of all these figures.
Totally, which is why I need to actually do it out on paper to try and figure it out, but just like kind of working through it in my head. I just don't see how the numbers add up on this.
The challenge is you don't know how much time is 4-on-3.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's not easily available. So
right.
He's also taking, you can't forget about the Gordon Bombay factor in this, right? Where Gordon Bombay pulls Goldberg because they need to win in regulation. Well, they needed to win, period, to get into the playoffs in that one. And he's like taking the desperation approach here. We're like, well, we still got to.
Yeah. I mean, but that's been part of the commentary too, right? It's like, if you need to avoid the Vegas Knights getting any points, or you know, you need the swing to go completely in your favor, why aren't you pulling your goaltender in regulation? You know, the last 2 minutes of regulation when you're tied. I mean, that seems like kind of an even better idea. I don't know.
Anyway, the net of the example is like right now it's even. Like he would have had 2 points regardless of the outcome if he never pulled a goalie, right? He just happened to get 2 in one game and 0 in another.
Yeah, but also with not pulling the goalie, he could have gotten 4. You know, he could have won both those games. So.
Well, I'm just saying the minimum he would have had is 2.
Totally. It's anyway. Maybe your logic won't be an issue because no one will actually try this again.
We'll maybe. See. You know what? It has happened in the past, by the way. 20 years ago. The Canucks did it in 2003 and the Kings did it in 2000. Lost their loser points.
Well, your data from those years are all up too.
Yeah.
And it wasn't 4-on-3 at the time, I'm sure.
I don't think so.
Well,
right?
It technically could be in a penalty scenario, but I doubt it.
Our other, you don't see that every day, Ivan Fedotov made his NHL debut. Remember, this was the guy who had to go to Russia to, like, quote-unquote serve his military.
Well, he signed with Flyers, right? Mm-hmm. And then there was a dispute with the KHL.
Mm-hmm.
And then the international governing body ruled in favor of the Flyers, and the KHL was like, nah, we don't think so.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, and I thought it was related to his, like,
I think that's
military.
How they framed it.
Yeah.
Right?
And but they the made it, yeah. They kind of made it sound like they were, like, shipping him off to fight in the war.
Yeah.
But then they didn't. He was actually just basically being forced to play hockey in Russia instead. So, anyway, he made his NHL debut.
That's the Russian version. Don't check us on that.
When the Habs score a goal, I feel like the announcer says something like that, right?
Hey, the blue
or something like that. Don't check me on that.
Don't
if
check
you
us
speak
on that
French, either. Don't check me on that.
We know boo is goal in French. We got that.
Yeah. But yeah, so anyway, he makes his NHL debut in relief, and that game goes to overtime, and he goes to the wrong end of the ice to start, which is a tough luck.
I wonder if the rule's different in the KHL where you play the overtime in the same.
I mean, I never really understood why they switch unless it's just to create more offense because of the long change.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, because they're trying to get the game to end in overtime, right? Like they start on like the second period end for overtime.
Yeah.
Which makes
it a long change.
It's easier to pin a team in, I guess, with the long change.
Yeah.
So anyway.
I guess that's consistent with it overtime in the playoffs where they just switch. So
We now move on to our weekly one-timers.
Whoopsh.
Our first weekly one-timer.
Whoopsh.
Do we need to mention that Jeff Skinner hit his 1,000 games?
No,
that's
let's
what's
not
written
mention
down.
That. Let's not mention
let's
that.
It's definitely not mentioned that Jeff Skinner has 1,000 games. Or that seems pointless.
Since we led this show with it, too.
Definitely not.
That's my point. Like, do we really need to do a one-time run?
No.
Okay. Definitely not.
Let's
a
move on.
Podcast.
All right, we'll
Let's
skip it. Interesting or carry on?
Carry on.
Carry on.
Definitely carry on.
Our next weekly one-timer. Sidney Crosby is going to average a point per game for the... Do we know this for sure?
Yeah.
He's crossed 82...
Yeah, we'll get into that in a second.
Okay.
Foreshadowing.
He will average a point per game for his 19th season, which ties Wayne Gretzky for the most ever.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Cool.
What are we going to get into?
Just give it time.
I already know what your tweet of the week is.
Okay.
I already know because I saw it today.
Okay.
Even before I look at what you've put on the show notes here, I already know. Finally, our last weekly one-timer. The Newfoundland Growlers are no more. John, you're wearing your Newfoundland Growlers shirt today. Have you been wearing it all day and this is by coincidence?
No, I think I wore it over the weekend and it was sitting kind of... on a shelf somewhere, and I grabbed it when you guys came over in tribute, in solidarity
you already knew,
with the Growlers.
You already knew that the Growlers were exiting.
Yeah.
Had met their untimely demise.
Yeah.
And then you put the sweatshirt on.
I think they launched while we were doing the show, because I'm pretty sure we talked about it. It was a weekly one-timer probably in the first season.
And I remember being like, oh my God, look at this.
Yeah.
Look at this awesome logo with the cute puppy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sad.
So you used more of a Batman voice in the first season, it sounds like.
That's how I used to sound in my head.
Okay.
When I think about myself having conversations in the past, I'm like,
all right,
wow, did you see that game 7 of the Colorado Avalanche series between the Kraken and the Avalanche? It was awesome. That's how I sounded back then.
So
it's been a long year.
It has. So just for people who don't know, the Newfoundland Growlers are an ECHL team that folded. Do we know for sure that they don't have, there's no possibility they could come back next season?
No, I think they're like gone.
They're gone. They're done.
They were trying to sell them, and apparently the ownership group also owns the Trois-Rivières Lions. I'm pretty sure I pronounced that right, too.
Definitely. No notes.
The Lions, and they were able to sell the Lions. So the Lions are staying. And I think the Lions were affiliated with the Habs, and the Growlers were affiliated with the Maple Leafs.
That sounds right.
But so yeah, they've like fully disbanded. So it was like effective immediately, the Growlers are ceasing operations. If you had tickets, you know, for upcoming games, those are going to get refunded. So that's it. They're just like done.
Yeah. And the ECHL level players are free agents. They could sign with another team. But if you're on an NHL or AHL Toronto contract, you got to play in the AHL or the NHL, or you got nowhere to play.
That's kind of rough.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, those are our weekly one-timers. Whoopsh. We close the show with our tweets of the week. John, your tweet of the week.
The tweet of the week of
tweets
the week is...
of the week.
So Sportsnet says, that's 19 straight point-per-game seasons for Sidney Crosby. Crosby is now tied with Wayne Gretzky for the most in NHL history. And Evolving Wild, great sight, great content.
Love
awesome,
the Twins.
Awesome stuff. Love the Twins.
Second best Twins.
Yeah.
After the Twins at Climate
Pledge. Third. The Minnesota Twins. They are also from Minnesota.
That's
but,
true.
Yeah.
So Evolving Wild subtweet says, not to be pedantic. Okay, fine. To be pedantic. Points per game is a rate stat. Are the Penguins just going to sit him the rest of the year? LOL. The reality is he hit 82 points.
Right. So he's guaranteed to be a point per game player.
And I thought they did that to be funny. And then it turns out that's not the case, which is amazing considering the math geniuses that those two twins are. Yeah. So I enjoyed that a little bit. It was just kind of funny.
And so, Kyle Dubas responded to that with a Tim Robinson thing, which is kind of funny. So
you sure about that?
Yeah.
Pretty good.
My tweet of the week comes from at NHL Taylor, and this is a very visual one, so you guys might want to click on it on your show notes. But it just says, this is the most insane face-off setup I've ever seen. It was a 4-3 game between the Winnipeg Jets and the Los Angeles Kings with 0.5 seconds left. They had an offensive zone face-off. And the Kings had their goalie pulled. So they had six players on the ice. They had their guy taking the face-off, and then they had all five players just lined up in a horizontal line across the hash mark, ready to try to like crash the net. And it does look very funny. It's like, I don't know.
What else are you going to do, I guess, right?
I guess. Yeah. It looks to me like they're like somebody photoshopped all these players in and just like put them in a perfect line. It's really funny looking.
That's pretty good.
All right. That's my tweet of the week. Curtis, your tweet of the week.
Yes. So mine comes from sound_hockey.
Oh, that's a great account. You should follow it if you don't already.
Indeed. I would recommend it. The intern does some good work. So in the Anaheim series, this tweet is from the second Anaheim game, but my understanding is there was a similar tweet for both Anaheim games.
Yeah.
But the tweet says, Justin Schultz on the ice with Ty Cartier, Logan Morrison, Ryan Winterton, and Ryker Evans. Somehow his line mates got even younger than last game, and it has the little meme of, how do you do, fellow kids?
Oh, Steve Buscemi.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the previous one was Cartier, Morrison, Winterton up front, and then the intern didn't even include that.
That was a close one.
But Gustav Olofsson was the partner, which I thought was interesting that like those four had just gotten called up, and they're all playing with Justin Schultz. So how do you do, fellow kids?
Very good.
Thank you. Those are our tweets of the week.
And that wraps up 281. No reviews, so please get your reviews in. That would be nice. We'll read them on the show as long as it's 5 stars. Thank you to our Patreon members. We don't have anything special content this week, but we appreciate you. And that's about it, I guess. Okay. Tune in next week for 282.
Something sweet and almost kind, but he was mean and he was coarse and unrefined. And now he's dear and so unsure. I wonder why I didn't see it there before. She glanced this way, I thought I saw. And when we touched, she didn't shudder at my paw. No, it can't be, I'll just ignore. But then she's never looked at me that way before.